Hello, you are listening to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Nintendo Switch UK podcast. It's episode 63. We are here for another round of talking about the latest Switch stuff. And I'm Mike.
I'm Al.
I'm James.
And I'm Anton.
Yes, and as you may have heard, there is an extra voice that we haven't heard in a little while. Welcome, James. How lovely
to hear
from you and to see your face, because we're live streaming this as well for our Patreon supporters too. So you might see the odd clip on our new YouTube channel, which we're going to come on to. But James, how on earth are you?
I'm good, thanks. I've just been planting lots of trees and doing lots of fishing and not much else.
Also playing Animal Crossing?
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to come on to that in a minute, because that is probably the most that I've seen you play recently is Animal Crossing. We have had a few games of Splatoon as well. But before we get started on this week's news, let's find out what everyone's been playing. Anton, let's start with you. What have you been playing this week?
Oh, I've been very much giving into the hype of going around at the moment, and I've dived back into the original Streets of Rage, giving that a go, and you know, I'm hoping to work up my way through. I've never actually completed any of them. I always get a slightly bit sidetracked before then. So hoping to do a little wee marathon through, because the reviews for the fourth one have been absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Is it cool? I mean, have you been playing it cool?
I haven't, but it has been fun. I've been playing it with an arcade stick, which I haven't played a game with one of those in a good while, which got to enjoy the cliffy clicks of a good old arcade stick. But outside of that, what have you been playing, Alistair?
Well, you know what? I finally splurged, in inverted commas, in the sale, spent a whopping, was it £12, and bought Ghostbusters. So I've been playing a lot of Ghostbusters this week. I have been a very, very happy chap. In fact, to be fair, I went and watched Ghostbusters 1, watched Ghostbusters 2, and then started playing the game.
Excellent. Right choice. I got it for my birthday last year, and in a hotel room, took my Switch and played Ghostbusters all evening, which was fantastic. And it's a great game. I actually finished it on the Switch. It's really good. And obviously, it's a game that's been out for a while, but I didn't play it the first time around. But you did play it the first time around, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I played it on the PlayStation, I'm going to say it was on the PlayStation 3, and I completed it back then. But it was long enough ago that it's familiar when I'm playing it, but I don't think, oh yeah, I remember this, but I've played this bit. It's still a new and fun experience. But I do remember on the PlayStation, that game was really, really glitchy. And I was really upset. So started off the first level, got to like towards the end of the first level, and hit a glitch with a ghost that wouldn't get captured, just stood there in the middle of the air, hovering above a trap and refused stubbornly to go in. And I thought, oh, here we go again. But I'm now many, many, many hours in, completely glitch-free thereafter. So hopefully it carries on that way.
Yeah, it was weird because I haven't played through it. I didn't have that glitch, which was good. But so I was surprised when you said that, because I didn't have any real kind of issues with it. But glad to hear you're enjoying it. James, I know obviously Animal Crossing. How has it been for you, and what else have you been playing?
It's been very good. It is a massive time sink, but I have plenty of time on my hands at the moment. So that is fine. Been playing a lot of that, playing some Picross, and have got a very terrible setup to play Jackbox with some pals as well, which involves using a phone stacked on top of a bunch of DVDs.
Yes, we kind of stole
filming
that idea.
My TV.
We stole that idea from you, and we've all kind of done sort of versions of that ourselves. Well, certainly Alistair and I have done the same thing, James.
No, it's probably a better way to do it, but it works.
Well,
I think
the premium way to do it is buy it on a Mac or a PC and then screen share is probably the premium way to do it. And one of the people that played it with us when I did it is Charlotte, who I work with. She lives, she's in the north of England right now because she's back home. She's normally in London. And her family, after she played it once with us, went out and bought every Jackbox set on the Mac.
I can't even imagine how much that costs. That's a... They're like £20 each.
Yeah, well, you know, at the end of the day...
No, they're not. They're on sale at the moment.
Yes, they are on sale on the Switch right now, which is a good spot as well. And we talked about a few games that are on sale. There are a few right now that you definitely want to check out on the Switch on sale. And it's annoying because I have far too many games right now. And I know we do in one of our Patreon podcasts, we do a kind of... games on sale section in Roundup, and I don't do it here, but I also don't do it for my own benefit, because if I start doing this every Sunday, then I'm just going to end up buying more games, and I don't need to do that.
It's really unhealthy. Like when we start that section, it's like we have a couple eShop deals, and then Mike takes over, and it's like, all right, throw the wallet away. This is where it all goes downhill.
I know, it really is. I've been playing Zelda, actually. I've gone back to Zelda, and I've been enjoying it. I played a fair bit. I played probably maybe another 7 or 8 hours, maybe, over the course of the week, which has been quite good. So I've done a few more shrines. I went snowballing.
Oh, yeah.
Which is basically to farm money. That was the main reason I did it. And I was like, this is great. And then I was a bit bored, so I just went back about my business, because it takes a while.
Yeah, I spent about a 2-hour flight just literally snowballing and getting tons and tons of money, but it got a tad monotonous.
Yeah, but it's great, and I'm enjoying it. It's weird with Zelda. I kind of like play it in bursts, but the thing is I need to sit down for 2 hours really to get anything out of it, unless I'm at a shrine. So I usually save when I get to a shrine and don't do the shrine, just in case I've only got half an hour when I'm finished, you know, when I come back on, and then I can do a shrine and I feel like I've actually achieved something. So I'm getting there with it, but I want to finish it before the next one. And then, of course, there's so many games coming out, you know, this month. We've got the BioShock collection, we've got Borderlands, and we've got the Outer Worlds coming soon, and about a million billion other games. And then James and I, we jumped on Splatoon 2 the other week. I know, Al, the free version, I think you've maybe had a go of it as well, Al, have you?
I've downloaded it ready to play with you guys, but you stitched me up last night and weren't available to play when I was finally free to do so.
I mean, you did ask us at 7:45, to be fair, at which point we'd already started a movie, which, by the way, we didn't end up watching. But we started watching Pikachu last night, but we didn't.
Oh, yeah. Very good.
So. But James, we had a bit of fun with that. And to be honest, it was good. It's a weird game, because I said this last week, I find it so confusing in the menu. And then you said, yeah, just press X, and then you can have all your options.
Yeah, I think there are a couple of times you're like, I don't know what button to press. It's like, and then I said, well, do the single player. And you said, I don't know how to find it.
Yes, true. Like, literally, I'm like, where do I go? And then the bit that I thought wasn't the single player, because I thought, this is too confusing, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, you were like, yeah, that's the single player, and I was like, right, I'm lost then. But as a multiplayer, I love it. It's great. I'm not terrible, I'm not great, James is much better, but you know, it's good fun, I must admit. And even for us colorblind people, Alistair, I think you'll enjoy it when you get there. So maybe at some point in the next few days. When does the trial run out, Alistair?
The 6th. So I've got plenty of days to play. I've got 3 days for now. Tons of time.
Okay, fine. Just before we get started then, just a quick reminder, if you want to support us, you can do it in many ways. You can leave a review for us on iTunes. 5-star, please, would be lovely. That does help. I think we're at 52 5-stars, and it really does help all of our rankings and things on our sort of Apple Music charts. So Apple Music there. Subscribe to us if you haven't already. I'm sure you have. If you're listening, you've probably subscribed, but if not, subscribe on your favourite podcatcher. What else have we got, Anton? We've got the website.
Indeed, at nsukp.co.uk. There we have a little wee kind of a fairly robust viewer, so you can go through and scan through all the episodes, so you can go back and discover all the last episodes we had James on in the vault archive, and sort it however you want. And there we've got links to everything, such as our YouTube, which we've been more active on now that we've got some video clips on there, which I'm quite excited, and you know, we'd love some feedback of what kind of stuff you like to see on there. And yeah, just from there you get kind of, we have a page going through and breaking down the Patreon and all the cool stuff that me and Mike get up to during the middle of the week.
Yep, absolutely. Go into the website and get all the details from there. But thank you very much for subscribing and listening and any of that. It all really does help us out hugely. And if you want to find out more, it's nsukp.co.uk. Let's move on then to this week's news.
Tell us that people want to know.
So we're going to start with a bit of a retro brawler. And I think this one, Alistair, for some reason, I've got you in mind for this one. It's the Media Indie Exchange's Jay and Silent Bob Mall Brawl. It's got a release day of the 7th of May, which is a few days' time, £12.29. It's a 2D NES-style brawler. It looks so much like a NES game that I actually, for a minute, I was like, in fact, I'm going to actually clarify with you. Is this actually a NES game, or is this just a new game that looks like a NES game?
It is a new game that looks like a NES game, but is an homage to NES games. In fact, that's even how the publishers, they've described it as a NES game. It's just for your Switch, and it's coming out in Steam as well. But actually, you know what? When I started looking at this game, because I completely missed the hype about it, I presume you all know who Jay and Silent Bob are from Kevin Smith's universe, right? I don't need to explain this to anybody, right?
And the Zoomer.
I mean, I know who they are. I don't particularly watch much of Jay and Silent Bob films. Yeah,
basically,
or shows
go back
whatever,
to Kevin Smith made, oh, what was the first one? I forgot what it was called. Made awesome movies back in like the 90s, something like that. And Jay and Silent Bob turned up in every single one of his movies, which were unrelated films, but they were just in them all as these characters, and they're hilarious, and they've kind of just kept going. So there was a sort of like a Kickstarter type thing. It wasn't actually on Kickstarter, but one of these Kickstarter type sites for Jay and Silent Bob, and the game there was I looked it up earlier on. It's called Chronic Blunt Punch, which is sort of a side-scrolling beat 'em up. It's basically this kind of a game, but with kind of cutesy modern cartoon graphics. And what they did as a little thank you, I guess, for their backers, is they've made this game, which is Jay and Silent Bob Marlboro, and they were going to release that for free to their backers. And then they decided, actually, we'll release it for free, but we'll also sell it. So it is now coming as both a physical edition, I think, and a digital download for the Switch. And that's really kind of cool. I'm quite excited about this. The game looks really good fun. It is literally a side-scrolling NES-style beat-em-up of Jay and Silent Bob, and you just walk along and you punch people and hit people with skateboards, and it's very, very 1990s in the way it looks, the way it plays, the way it feels. It just makes me so happy.
James, is it the kind of game that you're going to maybe play with a friend? Because I know that when we've played games like Broforce in the past, and okay, that's, you know, it's not the same kind of thing, but you know, the co-op element of it perhaps on this, because I'm assuming, you know, that's how I would see it being played.
I think so. It's not my type of game. It's a sort of game where I would visit you and you would say, let's play this. And we'll go, okay. And hopefully I'll enjoy it because you've got strange taste in 2D brawlers.
No, to be fair, there was one 2D brawler that I've said on the show before. What was it called again? It's on the Switch.
Is that the one you and me played?
Yes, and we enjoyed it. Me and you loved it, Alistair. Me and James... James hated it, and it's really funny because I think because James is younger than me and you, I think it's because we grew up with a lot of these games and we have that nostalgia for it. James, he was growing up with things like the N64 and the PS2 and stuff like that, which was much more kind of, you know, the platformy stuff and all the rest of it. So that's my theory, Alistair.
I think that's a very sound theory. I mean, yeah, like you said, we grew up playing Streets of Rage, or what was the one I had? It was Battletoads versus Double Dragon. Yes!
Yeah, Double Dragon.
Things like
that.
They were great games. And yeah, we've probably got a slightly nostalgic rose-tinted view of some of these games, but they're good fun. I don't care. They're good fun. I like whacking people with a baseball bat digitally. It means you don't need to do it physically in real life.
Anton, you're playing at the moment. You're going back in time and doing the kind of Streets of Rage thing. Does this look like something you would go for?
You know, I'm completely amazed that this is a game they were just going to go give away for free, because it doesn't look like it. Like, you know, it's a very 8-bit and kind of natively 8-bit kind of in a way a Shovel Knight would be, but it really does look quite polished, and in a similar way that I'm really happy to get Streets of Rage 4 now on the Switch so I can do multiplayer. I have never played a Double Dragon style game multiplayer, so Kelv, I would be up to try and kind of pick this up and get some multiplayer going, because it's an experience I haven't had yet.
You know what's really cool? Limited Run Games are actually doing a proper NES cartridge.
Nice.
Oh, really? Like, to put in a NES, or is it like a theme box?
No, to put in an actual NES.
Oh my god. Oh, that's wonderful. There's nothing more disappointing when you get a game that looks like it could run on the original hardware and they're like, no, we've actually cheated the system. It's a 3D game that we've just like slapped pixels on. Like, when it's built to the code, that's where it's great.
Yeah, this is awesome. It fits in a proper NES cartridge.
Oh, excellent. Well, you know, I think I am definitely interested to see how this looks when we get released in just a few days' time. It's going to be $12.29, which is pretty good value, depending, of course, on how. And I love the fact that, as you say, Alistair, they've built this as if it's a NES game, so it feels like had they wanted to go to the expense, they could have tried to make it for the NES, like you get a lot of new games made for old consoles, but they've gone, nah, actually, let's just put it on other things. So the Switch is a great place for that. Next up is another game with a lot of retro feels, and this one, really excited to come to the Switch, because this is a game that is brilliantly reviewed. It's not just brilliantly reviewed by reviewers, but by people who play it as well. It's 3D Realms. They've announced Ion Fury. It's come to the Switch on the 14th of May, so just a little week or so to go for that one. $24.99. It's a first-person shooter built on the same image and style of a classic first-person shooter like Duke Nukem. It really does look like that, but it feels much more kind of made for now, and it brings me back to those days where you would have networked PCs to play games like this. Anton, I have to say, I really like the look of this one.
Yeah, it looks absolutely stunning, and it's been interesting following the history of this game, because it originally started off as a game by the name of Ion Maiden. Lawyers came chapping at the door, of course, but there they were trying to do something very ambitious for early PS4 era, and it ended up looking like a early PS2 game, and eventually it turned into what we have today. And it honestly looks like, if you know, with the old Doom Duke Nukem games, they were 3D shooters, but they're really just sprites kind of rotating to trick 3D. And this looks like if we never discovered what a polygon is, and then we just made a game today. It looks, I'm really loving the style of it, Al.
It is awesome. It's a proper blast from the past, this, isn't it? It's bright and vivid, and it just, that your description is spot on. It is Duke Nukem today. It looks so good. And to be fair, the reviews of it have been fantastic. I mean, I guess 9.5s, 10s. It is stunning, sort of the best first-person shooter ever type thing. It's just mind-blowing.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomised genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that owl has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favourite podcast platforms now.
Yeah, James, I know that it is a bit kind of 90s in its feel, but I have a feeling that you might be interested in this.
Yeah, I don't really know that much about it, but you're selling it well. You guys are selling it really well.
Yeah. Well, that's I guess that's the job, isn't it? Like that's you know, if we like an idea of a game. But I think the thing about this one, what I really like about it, it is probably the retro thing. It's probably the nostalgia thing again. I'm being perfectly honest. Much like the reason that me and Alistair love Streets of Rage style games, and James is a bit meh on them. It's probably the same reason. But at least this one, I feel, has a lot more substance to it. I don't necessarily think you need to have the retro feel for it, Anton. To you don't necessarily need to have loved that the first time around.
You know, it's the thing I'm quite curious about it, beyond just the aesthetic value of it, is it looks like it has the kind of PS1 era difficulty of first person shooters. You know, there are many shooters in the last couple of decades I've loved. When you play them on like the harder difficulties, like I've been going through on Legendary all the Halos as a little wee goal to myself, and it's less hard, it's just more so, how much patience do you have, and how much are you willing to just pop out behind cover, fire one bullet, go back? Whereas this, it's got the health packs, it has boss battles, which you rarely get in shooters now, and apparently it gets really hard in the kind of final act of the game, so difficult in gameplay wise. It might be nice to experience it with more than 12 frames per second.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, next up then, Baltaro Games have announced Urban Flow. It's coming out quarter 2 2020, single player or scalable co-op modes. This sounds like a disaster already for the colorblind among us. Manage traffic lights and prevent accidents. Alistair, over to you.
I mean, I think that worries me a little bit. I've not managed to find much on it. It looks interesting. It's I don't know how to describe it. The only thing I could find was like a little, almost like a GIF that they had on their website, showing you traffic moving around the city. That's all I could find.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a bit of it, and it reminds me a bit of those kind of like management sims where, like, what's the airport ones you get, like, on mobile apps? There's the planes coming in and out. You have to manage the timings. Yeah. James, you've played one like that, haven't you?
I can't think what the name is, but yeah, and you draw the paths of the planes and.
Oh, I had one like that. I loved that game. And then it stopped working when they upgraded iOS to 64-bit.
That's very true, it did. There was a problem with it. But yeah, it reminds me of a bit like that, but more kind of blocky and a bit more kind of colourful looking. And you know, I think there's potential here because it's going to be a management traffic type sim. And if you are someone who gets a kind of buzz out of managing things, think like 911 operator, which I, for some reason, can't play, and I don't understand why I'm doing so wrong, because I'm sure that me and Alistair are fairly similar at our standards of gaming, but yet, for some reason, Alistair's thinking it's a breeze, and I think it's impossible, and I don't understand that. But James, this feels like the kind of game that I think you would play.
I think so. I agree with you about 911 operator. Didn't quite get it.
Yes,
really liked This Is the Police. You recommended that to me, but 911 operator, I didn't quite get. So I'm hoping this is on the can understand side of things and not the inexplicably can't play it for unknown reasons.
Yeah, I mean, Anton, you know the game Conduct Together. It reminds me a little bit of this.
I'm quite intrigued by this game. You know, like for me, when you play a game like City Skylines or Sim City. Half of that game is a management sim, like managing traffic and making sure things work. And I think in 2020, with Burnout coming out, it will help add to my balance of causing and diverting crashes. It will be the equilibrium I need inside for myself.
Yeah, well, it is coming fairly soon if you want to check it. And the idea of a co-op, that scares me, Anton.
It's really interesting. It might seem weird, the inclusion of scalable co-op, but basically it's literally the kind of case of you just plus on your controller and then you jump in. But apparently the game scales so you have more cars. It gets harder. So it isn't just like you're kind of making it easier by yourself by getting a friend in. It sounds like insanity. I could easily see this being a yelling at your friend because they murdered 20 people or something like that.
I mean, I do that without playing games, as Alistair well knows. So next up, we've got one from SNK. They've announced SNK Gals Fighters. It's now out on the Switch for $7.99. Don't overlook this one because it was a game that was really well reviewed and a lot of people really rate it as well. It's got that kind of proper retro feel. I think it was back about 2000. I think it was Neo Geo, isn't it, Anton?
Indeed,
originally?
It was Neo Geo Pocket Color. And you know, if you know anything about SNK, they have an astounding track record when it comes to fighting games. And even on the Neo Geo Pocket Color, Gals Fighters is one of the best because it's one of the most recent franchises in their roster. So you can tell they'd really learned a bit and, you know, borrowed basically a bunch of the female characters from a bunch of their sub-franchises. So the resulting game of that is a real kind of hybridization, kind of polished up version of anything they've done before.
$7.99, good price as well, James. Obviously, it's a retro fighter, but as Anton says, SNK tend to do quality fighters. And for $7.99, we don't have a virtual console, but it feels like we're getting these kind of games and it's kind of filling that space for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think so. And as you say, it's a decent price for something like this. It's clearly something that a lot of people are going to want to enter their collections.
Yeah. Alistair, what about you? Because I know that you quite like a fighter now and then.
I don't mind fighters. I used to quite like fighters, actually, back in my, I'm going to say, my heyday of gaming. I'll put it that way. I loved them. But actually, you know what? I've got to the stage now where I play them so infrequently that if I pick up a controller, within about 30 seconds or so of the first round, my thumbs are aching. I can't play fighters anymore. I've lost the ability to do it, and I don't have the... I'm going to rephrase that and say I don't have the patience to sit and actually put hours in to build up my thumbs again. But I mean, it's don't get me wrong, it is supposed to be a fantastic game. It was a great game at the time. It's come out already. The reviews are saying it's just as good as it ever was. So it's a nice addition.
Yeah. And with regards to our thumbs, I'm quite curious to give this one a go because it's not every day you play a fighting game with like only two buttons. I think I can wrap my head around that. I'm not great at fighting games, but a start.
That was what I was going to say. Maybe the fact that this was a Neo Geo Pocket Color game might help swing it for people like me and like Alistair, who maybe aren't so kind of good at fighters these days, but, you know, that sort of simplifies things a bit. So I'm going to check that out, I think. Next up, this one I'm really interested in. This looks really, really good. It's Dangan Entertainment's Bug Fables, The Everlasting Sapling, which I think is an epic name. It's got a release date the 28th of May. It's described as a Paper Mario-style RPG. Reviews are really, really solid of this. People really seem to like it. I love the animation style. It does remind me of that kind of cut kind of paper art thing, James. And it feels like the kind of game that you could sort of, you know, if you're on the fence about it, it feels like the kind of game that you want to play and try out. So I'm definitely interested in this. What about you, James?
I think so. I'm really looking forward to it. Thousand Year Door on the GameCube is one of my all-time favourite games. And I really hope that they eventually remaster it in HD for the Switch or something, just so I can play it again. But this looks really good. The art looks really fun. And I think the writing is hopefully really good. From the wee bits I've seen, it looks quite sharp, quite funny, and I think you need something like that when it's a game like this, and I think that'll help to suck everyone in.
Yeah, Anton, I know that, again, it feels like it's maybe giving that sort of space where we don't have the kind of Paper Mario-style games at the moment, but it feels like we might have something to kind of fill that void.
Yeah, you know, when Paper Mario came onto the scene, it was such a mature title, and it's like, not in terms of its themes, obviously, but in terms of its quality, where, because it built off the back of kind of Super Mario RPG 1 and 2 on the SNES, it kind of had a level of polish and identity kind of from the offset. And, you know, those early titles, it had the kind of benefit of being like a first in a franchise where all the ideas were fresh, combined with the kind of polish of being having built upon Super Mario RPG. And, you know, we've kind of lost that with the most recent entries. And this seems like a lovely homage to kind of a version of a franchise that we've kind of lost. So I'm kind of glad, because the Paper Mario fans have been really let down the last couple of games. They have not had good titles, so means we don't have to have too much or too high expectations for the next one coming.
Yeah, I mean, also, again, it's quite retro in its look. Do you think it's something that you might look at?
No, see, I think I'm going to be the lone dissenting voice here. So I watched that and thought, nah, it is not doing it for me. The animation style is just really, I don't know, it looks like it's a really, really, really bad Saturday morning cartoon. It just didn't do anything for me at all. I like Paper Mario. I like the way it's put together and the way it animates and the art style. But this one just looks too, I don't know. There's just something really, really off-putting about it for me. The way the characters move, the animations are just, I looked at it and went, nope, straight away. The gameplay might be the best gameplay ever. And I still don't think I can get into that. Because it would just, I don't know what it is. I have no idea why I dislike it so much. It just irks me.
It is very different, I think, in style to most other games. Like Paper Mario was, I guess, and it's maybe just too much of a kind of, you know at odds.
It looks like a mobile game. You know the way mobile games have got that weird kind of cutesy look, but it's very specific to this is a mobile game? Sort of looks like that. Just that style. Yeah, I'm not saying the game looks like a mobile game, but the art style is that style.
Yeah. I mean, I think when I saw a couple of the stills, I might have agreed, but when I saw the actual kind of, you know, footage of the game, I felt more like it looked a bit more solid than a mobile game. But certainly very well reviewed. So worth checking out if you are a Paper Mario style RPG fan. 28th of May, it's coming out, so you've got a bit of time to mull it over. Another game, I think, Anton, I'm going to come to you on this one, because I know that you've got a bit of love for this franchise, but Oddworld, Munch's Odyssey. We knew it was coming. It's coming on the 14th of May, $26.99. Fair price for it. I know it's not your favourite in the series, but it's another decent one.
Yes, you know, it's a very charming title, and it really, all of the Oddworld games had their kind of hint of weirdness, but you could kind of explain it where, oh, the first couple ones are kind of like a kind of gritty, weird lemons, the kind of Stranger's Wrath is kind of shooter in the Western. This one just embraces all the weirdness, and I think even if you look at the artwork alone for this game, you kind of get it. Like half the game you spend in like a weird mutant kind of blob thing that's in a wheelchair, and then you're like telepathically communicating to people. The other half, you're kind of this tall, lanky dude kind of pointing people around and getting little wee armies, lemon style 3D. It's such a bizarre title, Alistair.
Oh, yeah, it is weird, but I do feel a certain affinity for the tall, lanky, weird dude, I have to say.
I mean, I'm not sure who's going to say they feel an affinity with the other character you just mentioned there, Anton. But, James, what about yourself? Do you know much about... I mean, the one game in this series that sticks out in my head is Abe's Odyssey, which is the classic Mega Drive era, SNES era game that I think a lot of people probably played when they were, if they're of Alistair and I's age, they probably played that game. James, is there anything in this that's... I just have a feeling this is maybe not your retro.
I really don't know anything about it. And the descriptions have made me both curious and slightly concerned at the same time.
It is weird.
To be honest, when you play it, you get even more questions. I still don't understand them.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. 14th of May, $26.99, that one. Next up, Coffee Stain Studios. They've announced Hunt Down. To be careful how I say that. It's a new futuristic 16-bit shooter. Side-scrolly kind of look to it. My concern with this is it all looks very busy on the screen, Alistair. And, you know, I think there's potential there. I have a feeling you're going to be more taken by this than me. I do like the 16-bit vibe. It's 60 frames per second as well, which is cool. The soundtrack's supposed to be very good as well. I probably won't play this, but Alistair, what's your thoughts when you had a look at this one?
There's something really engaging about it. I mean, I don't know if anybody's actually watched this trailer, but it's sort of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's got a vibe of sort of Terminator and...
RoboCop.
Yeah,
and,
a bit of RoboCop.
Michael Jackson's Moonwalker.
Yeah, throw in a little bit of, oh, come on, what was the... Oh, ow.
Yeah,
sci-fi
that one.
Movie, robots, do robots dream of electric sheep. What's that movie? Blade Runner. Yeah, it looks like that. It's gritty, it's cool, it's funky, it's got proper 80s futuristic cars in it. It just looks cool. And I didn't think it looked too busy. It just looked like how I remember these games looking in the past. Just side-scrolling, kind of a platformer, kind of a shooter, something like that. Just good, fun, engaging again. Tweaking my nostalgic nipples a little bit. And looks fun. I want to give it a shot.
Well, are they tweaking your nostalgic nipples, James?
I really don't know how to answer that question, to be honest.
Quote of the episode.
It sounds quite good, though. It sounds like something you could just sit down and get completely lost in. And you know those games where you're like, I've been playing this for half an hour and I just completely zoned out and onto autopilot. So might be a good time waster.
Yeah, I'm feeling the same way, James, where it's... You know, when you revisit a lot of games from this era, whether it be like a Strider or something like that, you kind of go back and then you're like, yeah, I'm only really moving in four directions. It wasn't the action-packed, fluid experience I remember. Where this one looks, I don't know what it is about it, kind of looks more fluid than a lot of other 16-bit games are. And it hasn't done too much to... Like, I know you see some pixelated games now and they've got like fancy lighting and glowing... It doesn't really do anything like that, but still it looks like a cut above the rest. I'm really liking the look of this one.
It's interesting. I mean, I have nothing against it, per se. I don't know who Percy is, but I don't have anything against it. But I probably won't go and rush out, so I'll maybe let you take over from that. You all right there, Al? You seem to have
I'm just laughing at your terrible airplane joke there.
Sorry. Right, moving on. Speaking about these hand-drawn RPGs, by the way, Indivisible is out now, but the creator, Mike Zaymont, is a little bit cross because he's only found out that it was out when Twitter told him. So it was done by the... It sounds like when I write a song for an artist in Asia and then I get told it's been released about a week later. So it's been done by a porting company, and it was based on an old build of a game which lacks the co-op, the NG Plus, or anything else recent. And due to the porting company just releasing it, they've had no time to promote the launch. And I think that's fair, because I don't think, Anton, we've really kind of talked about this, and that's a real shame.
Yeah, and you know, it's for a lot of like indie developers, and it was literally a one-man army kind of approach, I believe. You know, at that point, it could even just be like a single YouTube video you spend a day on. If it's just you on it, it's your baby. And I imagine just kind of having that control ripped from you, or just realizing that it was, you had zero control of it. He does come out and he's very happy with the port and job and it runs well on Switch. But to kind of be left in the dark, I imagine it's not fun, James.
No, it's weird that this is happening more often, because already just had it with Cooking Mama as well. And it's really weird to just, as you say, it's your baby, it's your game you've worked on, and then to find out all of a sudden it's somewhere you didn't put it. It's bizarre.
It draws a lot of parallels to the songwriting world, I'll put it that way. Unfortunately, when big companies get involved, there's sometimes very little you can do about the control of things that you've created. But Alistair, I think the game itself actually looks quite interesting. It's a real shame that we haven't had more time to kind of get to know about it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm aware, as far as I'm concerned, it came out of nowhere. But, I really feel for this guy. It's not fun having your game ripped for your control. I don't actually know who did the port. Did you, Anton, do you know who actually did the porting of it?
It's not a company that we would usually discuss. I think it's a much smaller team. It seems just so weird that they would do this. As a company, whether it be a team manager or whoever did this, your relationship to your developers is the most valuable thing. You want that to... And the fact that you couldn't even just... Like, at that point, you've done exactly what you want. You've made a fantastic port. That's the bit when you're like, huh? Look at us. Don't you want to pay us more? And they've completely missed out on it, Al.
They have. What a shame. What a shame for everybody involved. But at the same time, this kind of bad news story has made sure that we're all talking about it quite extensively.
True.
So from a PR point of view... Genius.
Yeah, maybe they're all in on it. Next couple of bits of news then. I'll just mention this because I think it's not a huge story to discuss, but Warface have added a 32-player Battle Royale mode, which I think is pretty cool. It's the free-to-play game, not to be confused with Warframe. It's Warface. I know they've got very similar names. Go and play it. 32-player Battle Royale. It's more value for money, which is great. And I want to get onto this bit of news this week, which is Reggie... is going to be launching a new podcast called Talking Games with Reggie and Harold, raising money for the New York Video Game Critics Circle nonprofit's mentoring work. The 7-part podcast is going to start in mid-May. We did allow him to. We had a discussion with him, and obviously, he was going to be part of our team. But we all agreed that because there was nonprofit mentoring involved, that we would allow him to break off and do his own thing, Anton.
Yeah, and we've already got like a podcast Twitter account. It isn't competitive with ours, if it's not competitive, but it looks like a really good show outside of our banter. I'm really excited because I don't know if you've ever listened to any of his lectures, which he did for University or New York, I believe. Those were very kind of insightful and, He seems like a lot more laid back and kind of free talking when he's not running one of the biggest video game companies in the world.
Yeah, I mean he's when he's not being Mr. Corporate, Mr. Fizumi is I think a pretty good guy. I mean, there's a lot of people have a lot of love for Reggie, so he's clearly a decent bloke. And the fact he's actually kind of wanting to do this is great. He's got a good rep. He's carrying it on. And I, for one, am actually looking forward to listening to this podcast because, well, why wouldn't you want to listen to Reggie speaking and Harold for that matter?
Yeah, James, are you going to be downloading?
I think so, yeah. As we say, Reggie is great when he's running a business, but he's great when he's not as well. So many things are like E3 and with Mega 64 and things, he's got a really good sense of humour. So I'm hoping all this comes out. I didn't know he did lectures and things, so that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, it's all business related, but he does anecdote a lot. And then he goes off in tangents because he's not actually a lecturer and he has no experience, but I love it nonetheless. And, the only thing I'm disappointed with is 7 episodes, I feel like this kind of thing, I hope like they get to episode 7, they get into it and they're like, we'll keep this going, more money for charity.
I suspect what they've done is probably record it over 2 or 3 days and then change that into their 7 episodes by process of editing, and they've realised that they have 7 episodes worth. It's probably how they've done it, because they've not time-stamped it by talking about new releases or things like we do. So I suspect they've done it that way, hence the 7 episodes. So if there's a good reaction, we may well see a second series of that. And obviously, when Reggie, if you're listening to this week's episode 63 and you want to come on and tell everyone about your podcast, that's fine with us. We're happy to cross promote your podcast, so come on next week and we'll get you to talk about it, no problem at all. Right, let's move on. Programmer Jin Chen Lem creates a new game for the Game Boy, which allows him, via the Game Boy Color's IR sensor, to control his air conditioning. Completely pointless, but utterly brilliant, Alistair.
Utterly, utterly brilliant. I love that. I love the fact that he's been so bored, presumably during lockdown, that he's gone, coded a game for his Game Boy Color to control his heating. I mean, one thing, who still has a Game Boy Color sitting around? I'm impressed. Secondly, testament to Nintendo's engineering. Very awesome. And third, how has this air conditioning got an IR receiver on it? that's the bit of this puzzle I'm completely missing.
You know, it amazes me. Like, I recently saw on Instagram that, kind of, I think it would have been, it was on 2000 basically on the dot. They started making sewing machines where you could plug in a Game Boy Color and then like put designs in and do program like patterns, and basically they wanted a cheap computer you can plug into a sewing machine. And they even had ones where you could dock it and it was like an iPod dock. And looking at that, kind of looking back at the Game Boy camera, you know, it has such a weird combination of technologies. It really makes me wonder what could have been possible, James.
It does. I don't understand how he can control air conditioning wirelessly, but I had to go and buy a link cable to trade Pokemon with people.
Yeah, it's weird. It was a very weird time. It felt like there was a lot of experimental stuff happened around that kind of era. And yeah, it's cool though. I mean, I think this is such a cool creative thing. I do like when, you know, things are kind of repurposed. Although that is a very weird repurposing. However, well done. Well done to that programmer, Jin Chen Lem. Next up, Limited Run Games have unveiled and sold out already, not surprisingly, of the Streets of Rage 4 Collector's Edition. The bit that surprised me was it sold out because it's $149.99, which includes a premium box packaging, reversible cover, original CD soundtrack, Chicken Stress Ball 7-inch statue, standard Genesis size clamshell case, commemorative metal cartridge housed inside the Genesis case, art book 18 by 24 inch poster and steelbook. So there's a lot of stuff in there. And the thing about this is that I think if you've got the money, it's probably sensible investment wise, James, because I don't see it ever really dropping much below that.
No, I think you're right. It all seems very, well, it's a limited run. It's not gonna keep making these and devalue them. I think as long as people take good care of them, don't ruin the packaging, I think it'll probably sit nicely on a lot of shelves.
Yeah, you know, the thing that winds me up about this is they deemed enough demand to sell a £150 version of this game, but not put the normal one on a shelf. But I think it will do because, you know, it does look gorgeous, and it seems like we're really getting back into doing big collector's editions. I know this week they announced the new collector's edition for the new SpongeBob game. A SpongeBob game, and it has a £300 collector's edition.
It's, wow.
Yeah. But if that's too expensive, they have a £150 one.
Which, oh, a bargain. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. Bargain.
You know, sorry, Anton, on you go.
No, I want to meet the person who came up was like, I won't go for the £300 one, but the £150, yeah, I can go for it.
Yeah, I think it's great having these collector's editions because, you know, the thing you talk about, obviously we talk about waste and things, but the good thing about these things are that because they're limited edition, people aren't wasting them. They're keeping them, they're collecting them, they're selling them on in the future if they decide they want to make profit on it in 5-10 years, or they're just keeping them in collections. I don't really think they're the kind of things that, it's not like, you know, sort of shovelware, Alistair, where you're just going to have like 100,000 copies of the game that nobody wants anymore.
Yeah, I mean, don't get wrong, I have no issue with this in the slightest. What I have an issue with is when they sell you a digital download cartridge or digital download code in a box. I have an issue with that. But good old-fashioned, actual hardware copy of a game, I'm all on board. I probably won't not buy this because I don't have 150 quid to buy a game. Plus, this one's sold out. But still, I think it's really cool the fact it's out there. I think a lot of people will buy them or will have bought them and will be making a mint in the future when they come to sell them. And it's just kind of cool. What I would be surprised at is if they do decide to do another run of just a standard release. So not the full collector's edition, but I can see this game being so popular that there is going to be a physical just standard run of them at some point.
Yeah. And they'll sell them for $60 a piece, no problem, and people will buy them. That's 50 quid. I can see that happening for limited run at that kind of price. Okay, next up, new Super Strategy Guide is released for Animal Crossing. It's over 1,000 pages. You thought you'd lost your hours, James, playing the game. Now you can lose them reading about the game.
Oh, I think I need it. But at the same time, I don't know how much more in-depth I want to get into this game. I'm presuming at least half is just the really weird, complicated thing of breeding flowers to make new colours, but some sort of checklist with fish, and I would be there.
Okay, you know, Anton, your thoughts, because it's your baby as well.
It's absolutely insane looking at it. It's literally, like, it's thicker than a Bible. It's really just, it's insane, and it has every single piece of furniture. It even has the variants. Sadly, I think it's exclusive to Japan right now, but it's done by the same people that do the strategy guide over here.
So I presume
it'll come out over here as well.
Okay.
But it's just insane. Like, the level, they've got every villager, and you can read about their bios and their character types. And, you know, it's a shame they didn't have this at launch, because this is a game that really benefits from a massive wiki. And, you know, they didn't have one at launch, and it was kind of coming from somebody who plays Minecraft all the time, and that wiki's up and running and it's been going for years and it has all the stuff you would never want to know. Not having that stuff at launch and knowing that they were hiding it from us, you know, scandalous, Al.
See, I just saw this news article and thought, oh, that must be Anton's dissertation, and he's plugging it.
Could well be.
How did you know?
We will never know. Next up, Venus and Serena Williams are going to compete in Mario Tennis Aces for a $1 million charity donation. I think well done to them and to everyone that's organised that. That's fabulous. Also, big news this week is that Burnout Paradise Remastered is going to be coming to the Switch on, we knew it's coming, but it's going to be coming on June the 19th for $44.99. You'll pick up physical, I'm sure, elsewhere for slightly cheaper. I've already seen some of the Bioshock collections and Borderlands collections for around about £32 online. So I suspect we'll see similar for that. We were all very excited about this. James, are you excited about Burnout Paradise as well?
I am. I got it on the PS4 not too long ago when it came out there, because I just really had an itch to play it again. Not at that price, though. I think it needs to come down in price a bit, because it's not an old game now, but to charge that much for something that is getting on a wee bit is a bit much.
I think with all the DLCs, I think if it was 20 quid, 20 to 30, I'd probably say, because it's got all the DLCs, I'd probably bite then, because I think it will
definitely
work well on the Switch.
Anyway, what's
I think it'll be great for all the folks who haven't had a chance to play it, because it's really fun.
Yeah, you know what? I'm putting a little wee bet out there. What's the odds that in, you know, 7 months' time we hear a quote from the head of EA and he's like, yep, we're not putting out any more games to the Switch because the £34 Burnout Paradise from 10, 15 years ago didn't sell well. I can just see the headlines right now.
Yeah, it seems like it is an expensive price tag, and it's something you see when you go into forums and you see people from on other consoles arguing about it. They'll say, well, hey, why would you buy on the Switch? It's like you can get that game for a tenner with all the DLC on the PlayStation 4. And we're like, yeah, but it's the Switch. And it's weird. It's very hard to explain to someone who doesn't have a Switch why we're actually okay with this. We're not okay with it, but why we're more tolerant of it. But we just are, for some weird reason, Alistair. We seem to just go, meh. And that's why the prices stay high.
I know. We've got this weird thing. We would just accept a Nintendo tax. It's bizarre, and frankly, it's our own fault. But having said that, how many of us actually do buy these games at full price? Or do we all, and I literally mean everybody who owns a Switch, just go, we'll wait for it to come out in a sale?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would buy it physical for £30 if it was a game I really wanted. I wouldn't pay more than £32, £33 for even the top game I wanted. I don't think I'd ever really pay. Unless it was launch day Mario Kart, for example, or launch day Breath of the Wild 2, I probably would pay £40 for that, because I know I'm going to make, you know, in terms of hours and value. But I'm guessing you're kind of similar, James.
Yeah, if it's a game I really want, I know I'm going to love it. I don't mind paying full price or pre-order and everything. But other than that, I do tend to shy away from that. Sometimes I'll just think, well, I'll just wait a few months and then I'll rent it a bit down the line or something like that and see if I like it. And then usually they've got DLC or something, so I can at least chuck them some money.
Yeah.
I've been probably the problem and got myself into a bad habit where, how I justify it, where as I look back to just 5 years ago when Need for Speed knew, I think it was Most Wanted, it was done by the same team as Burnout Paradise and everything, and you know, it came out and I think even then they were charging £40, and I went ahead and I bought it both on the Wii U and the PlayStation Vita, because I like playing games on the go and at home. And you know, the Switch, I'm getting these games for £22 each, a home console and a on the go version. So I'm part of the problem, and I also want the other games remastered.
Hugely part of the problem as well, to be perfectly honest, but there we are. Right, I'm going to fire through a few more bits of news just because I'm aware that we have still got a fair bit to get through. So Second Luigi's Mansion 3 DLC has been released. It includes three new mini-games, new floors, ghosts and costumes, which is nice extra value for, those of us that haven't already sold on our copy of Luigi's Mansion 3L. But that's definitely one to check out. Also, physical release date of the wonderful 101 remastered has been delayed to the 30th of June in the US and 3rd of July in Europe, which I'll come to you in a second, Al, because I know that you've, invested in that.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So I'm sort of getting physical, but that's fine. We'll wait. COVID-19, all that stuff.
Yeah, it's fine. Physical release of Little Town Hero, that's been delayed to the 23rd of June in North America, 26th of June in Europe as well. Yeah, just on the three bits of news there. Al, you mentioned there, obviously, you don't mind waiting, and that's fine. Luigi's Mansion 3 DLC, Anton, that's, again, good value.
Indeed, and it's all multiplayer content for the Scarescraper. So you're, even though it's like a couple levels and just little stuff, when you're playing the multiplayer maybe 10 times in a row, maybe being able to get a different thing every time or kind of having that variety, it multiplies exponentially. So good value for money.
Yeah. Shigesato Itoi has announced the Hobonichi Mother Project. Thanks for that sentence there. That was really easy to read. He's clarified that he's not interested in making a fourth game, but we can expect a book and other various contents and goods. The book will come out before the end of the year and include the scripts of Mother 1 to 3. I'll pass you by because that's going to be far too scary for you. James, I have this feeling you're not going to be playing this, but I do like collections of things. I like the fact there's a book involved and things as well, but I probably won't be playing it, even though, just because it sounds scary.
I think I need to look into it a bit more, but no, I'm not a scary games fan, but you never know. Sometimes these things surprise you and you start playing and you're like, that's a bit scary, but I can cope.
Yeah.
I think I'll have to see. Anton's just laughing at me.
Well, the thing is, Anton, as well, you've got those scripts, you've got the book, that's all nice. He's obviously not wanting to revisit it with a fourth game, but it's certainly plenty there to check out anyway.
Yeah, I should have clarified. Mother is Earthbound.
So, oh, right.
Yeah.
Wait, no, which game am I thinking of then?
I'm not too sure. So if you're not familiar, I think over here in the West, Mother 2 is Earthbound, and then Mother 1 is Earthbound Zero. Right. You know, a very dormant, beloved kind of Nintendo franchise that we really haven't heard of in a while.
If you said Earthbound, I would have said, Earthbound. I didn't know he was even called Mother. Yeah. Mother to me, I'm sure there's definitely a scary franchise by the name of Mother that I'm confusing that with. But hey, if it's Earthbound, that's a real shame, because I would have liked to seen another Earthbound game, Anton.
Yeah, you know, it's the main one, which I think is the only one people are really familiar with. Very Undertale vibes before Undertale was a thing. Really on the edge there, and it's as a Super Nintendo RPG, it's hard to kind of convince you to go back and kind of give it a go because they're so long and it's kind of on an older console that's got a battery and it might explode on you. This, I think it's worth that hassle.
Yeah. I genuinely would have liked to have seen another Earthbound, but that's cool. I realise what I've confused it with. There's a 2017 movie called Mother, which is a psychological horror. And I've completely confused it with that because I wouldn't have played it a scary game. So there we are.
Also released on the Super Nintendo?
Yeah, it does. Maybe. I don't know. Right, let's move on anyway from Earthbound / Mother / Horror / Not a Horror. Game Awards founder Jeff Keighley has announced the Summer Game Fest. This is something that Emily pointed out to us earlier this week. It's a new digital festival mode of playable content in game events and digital events. The first phase of partners are 2K, Activision, Bandai Namco, Bethesda, Blizzard, Bungie, CD Projekt Red, Digital Extremes, EA, PlayStation, Private Division, Riot Games, Square Enix, Steam, Warner Brothers, and Xbox. It would be great, Anton, if only we'd heard of some of those names.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting. What do you think the motives are behind this? Because, you know, Jeff, I don't think you'll be making much money off this. And he, you know, he's putting in making websites, he's promoting it, he's labeling it. What? Let's start with yourself, James. What do you think they're up to? What's their scheme?
I mean, at the bottom line, it's good PR. You get these folks' names out there. They're doing a nice thing for people, whether or not it's because they want to or not. As cynical as it sounds, it's still leaving a good impression for folks. And I know that perhaps some of these companies in recent years have not been quite as well received with certain aspects. So, no, we'll see.
Yeah, I've got to say, I think it is two things for me. I think that is part of it. I also think it's we're in a really weird time right now, and I think there probably are only limited things that a Game Awards founder in this at this time can do to really kind of keep things fresh and going. And I think the second thing about that is that just going forward, fostering those relationships with these companies, I think is a really big thing to, you know, to sort of even further increase a reputation. And then next year, when things hopefully are back to a bit more normality, it will hopefully mean for a much more official, you know, official type, you know, awards where they can really team up with companies and get them involved more at grassroots level. So I think it's all about, as James says, all about PR. It's all about building for next year. So you're right. You're probably not going to make any money out of this. But the offshoot of that is next year, all the companies, if it goes well, are going to go, yeah, well, thanks to Jeff Keighley. And, you know, he kind of put this thing together. And I think that's a big thing, Alistair, going forward.
See, you guys are saying it's probably not going to make much money from this. I suspect you'll make quite a lot of money from this. I mean, there will probably be ads through it in various places. You might not even notice them, but there will be ads and people will probably click on them. But the amount of information people will manage to gather or garner from it, you're basically saying to the industry or to the gamers out there, go focus on here. And everyone will then be able to see what people are actually watching, where the interest is, see what the reaction is in one kind of place. And he's already got all these connections out there, so he knows the people involved. He's also done a very good job of bringing all these big disparate companies together, although Nintendo, not by their absence, but they're never at E3 anyway. And I know we'll probably come into the news later, but Nintendo have already, I think, hinted or unofficially said they're not going to do their traditional Direct, which happens in June, which is a bit disappointing. So we can talk about that when we get to that bit. But it kind of all ties together. And this is basically just a replacement for kind of E3, I guess. E3's not happening. The industry needs something to get behind or wants something to get behind. This is just a nice way of doing it. And I suspect money will be made.
Yeah, I've kind of came to some similar conclusions, Alistair. And I think one part of it is maybe from a management side of this where nobody really knows what's happening. And I think everybody would like their own time to shine. I think, let's say, a smaller dev doesn't want to be sandwiched in between a PlayStation and Xbox event. And, you know, there's possibly some management on that side, but I'm also cynical and being like, this is very much like in the style. It's got very similar branding to the Game Awards. It almost feels like Jeff's just like, yeah, you know, all these events are happening digitally. What if I just hoard around them and be like, this is part of the Summer Games Fest. Yes, I made the Xbox keynote where they unveiled a new console or the PlayStation Last of Us event.
We found a division on the podcast. We found that James and I always see the good in every situation. Alistair and Anton, cynical about every single thing. All based on that one conversation. No, I think you're probably right. I think he's probably somewhere in all of that. You know, he's probably looking at all these things. And you're probably right. He probably will make some money from it. And he probably will be able to jump on things that were already happening. And why not? Because, you know, at the moment, you really are looking for ways to kind of do something a bit different. So I think fair play to him if that's what he's doing. And we'll see where it leads to in the future. Certainly some big names in there. It's going to be taking place, the Summer Game Fest, between May and August 2020. So I suspect, well, we're all mostly at home. Next up, the International Trade Commission have granted Game Vice an evidentiary hearing. So this is this ongoing case between the Switch and the Game Vice thingy-ma-bobber, Anton. And we've had some progress of sorts.
You know, it's the Game Vice is really like that one kid that kind of has, like, in the politics class, it really brings out the really offensive kind of arguments just to be a contrarian.
He's the one that's in the losing team at football and takes his ball with him and walks home because he's losing.
Exactly. It's it's almost sad at this point to just see that they're still going at it. I've got to give Nintendo credit for it. I feel like a lot of other companies would have just, like, settled something out of court. But Nintendo's just like, nah, you can try it. We've got good lawyers. We've been around for a while.
I think you're probably right. I think taking on Nintendo is probably fighting a losing battle, Alistair.
Probably. I mean, we've said before, it's a bit of a stretch, their legal case here. But hey, I mean, the US judiciary system is just doing what it's going to do. They'll hear the evidence and then they'll make a verdict. And if they decide that amazingly some award is made, I will be gobsmacked. But let's wait and see what happens.
Star Wars writer launches Gary Whitta, the host of Animal Crossing late night show Animal Taking, tweets request. Sorry, I'm just slightly confused by this.
You want me
that wasn't me just having a slight sort of
seizure
moment.
That was me having a moment writing it.
That's all right. When you're writing it, you're allowed to have a moment. It's when I speak it that it's me that sounds daft. Anton, what's happening?
Yeah,
here?
So the writer of Star Wars, I don't know which one, probably all of them, maybe not. I doubt it.
Yeah.
He's came along and in the joys of quarantine made a talk show in Animal Crossing called Animal Talking. And it is very inspired by your Conan O'Brien's late night shows with Jimmy Fallon. It's very cliche. He has a monologue, he has guests, he has a band. And he's tweeted out that he'd like to get Reggie on after a couple fairly popular episodes. And he started getting some good guests. And Reggie's gotten in contact with him.
Excellent. Good. Well, I mean, it means very little to Alistair and I in terms of, you know, the content. But James, is this something that you'll be checking out?
It would be. Slightly note that Reggie's got back to them, but hasn't replied to us yet for this podcast that is yet to air. But no, it sounds quite interesting. Some of the stuff people are doing with this game already is just mad. So to be able to have a whole talk show through it is really clever.
I know, it's great. I find it so creative, especially even in what's the concerts we've been having lately in
Travis Scott and Fortnite.
Yes, I just find that really cool. I mean, I'm not interested in that. I don't play Fortnite, and I'm not bothered about seeing Travis Scott live. But I think it's just a really cool idea, and I love these crossover things. It reminds me of one of the games I had on the Mega CD, which was one of the sort of big crossovers that I remember as growing up, which was INXS Make My Own Music Video, where it was kind of it was one of those live video kind of ones where you could cut together and make your own music video of Michael Hutchinson INXS at the time. Shows how long ago this was, and it's that kind of crossover thing, but taking it to like the next futuristic level. And I really like that. I think that's a really cool idea, and really clever that they've kind of that they've done this, you know, within the kind of Animal Crossing world, Anton.
Yeah, and you know, I think I see some comments kind of fearing for its relevancy and how long will the gimmick last. But to be honest, you can totally just remove the gameplay and it basically just turns into an interview, kind of an interview podcast with some good guests on it. I think even like the last episode they had like Felicia Day, which they're a fairly popular kind of individual. I've heard of them. I don't know what they do, so they've done something. And I'm just impressed by the commitment to the format of a talk show. It's kind of very well done in its parody essence, which I was impressed by.
Yeah, it's cool. I think it's a really, really clever idea, and I think more of these, please, because it just kind of adds a new element of, you know, sort of real world to these games as well, which I think is really cool. Right, let's move on then. Let's talk about this week's rumours.
Now, I'm not normally one for gossip, but...
First up, Koei Tecmo's financial reports have leaked that Persona 5 Scramble the Phantom Strikers is getting translated. I mean, it's not Persona 5. So I'm confused, Anton. Why did it not just say Persona 5's coming to the Switch? This is a cool rumour, but it's not what I want.
I feel like we're just getting bullied now. They're going to make it where they're like, yeah, we're releasing Persona 3 and Persona 4, and if you buy both of them, we'll give you Persona 5, maybe, but as an IOU. It just... Like, I was making a poster today because episode 62 of the podcast was our 100th kind of episode combining all of our Patreon and specials. And the first episode of this podcast, we were talking about Persona 5 maybe being on Switch. And it'd been out for 2 years at that point.
Oh, it's crazy. So funny. I mean, you've played Persona 5, haven't you, James?
Yes, yeah, I did. I really liked it. I really don't understand why they haven't just brought it over. Developers keep putting out these surveys going, what would you like to see on the Switch? Would you like to see this translated into English or ported onto the Switch? And everyone must be going, yes. And then they go, oh, okay, would you like to see it on the Switch? And they just keep going round and round and round.
Just having
and
a laugh.
I don't know they're why just, they're just like, not doing
many,
it.
Let's see how many losers we can get this week to say yes, we want that game. Anyway, there you are. Persona 5 Scramble. The Phantom Strikers is getting translated. That's the leak there that we've heard. Also, there's been a data mine of Ninjala, and that's found tons of hints of a Sonic collaboration. Now, Anton, I can hear you almost going into a spin over this.
Indeed, Mike. You know, I am really impressed where this indie game just came out of nowhere. They're getting collaborations with fairly big, substantial, like, we haven't had a Sonic Fortnite collab, or we haven't had it in like any of those like Brawlhalla. And then this little wee indie game that nobody came out knew was coming out until they showed it off at an event, which, you know, kind of, it's not even in beta. It could have been an awful game, which I've heard good things. And they've got collabs in the pipe, so I get an impression this is going to be a fairly substantial game in the long term.
You should maybe give them a ring to make sure they're not telling tales. Two Sonic references in one sentence. Come on. James, have you seen much of Ninjala? It looks really good. We were talking about this the other week.
Yeah, I've seen bits and bobs. And then I saw on Twitter the other day, everyone's going mad about the load testing and stuff. And I'm going on the eShop trying to search for it, couldn't find it. And then kind of thought, I'll deal with it later. And then forgot all about it till just now. And now I'm annoyed with myself because what I saw looked really cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this coming, actually. It could be another one where we kind of all jump on together and try, much like we're planning to do with Splatoon as well. But yeah, Sonic, that'd be great. That'd be, and it would make sense given the timing. Obviously, Sonic's got the anniversary and all those kind of things. So I could see that potentially happening. Final rumour this week, VentureBeat have shared that apparently Nintendo is telling partner developers it's not going to hold one of its Nintendo Direct video events in June. This has been backed up by Eurogamer. Given the slow start to the Directs this year, we've had the Indie, then we had the kind of mini Direct. I'm not hugely surprised given everything else that's going on in the world, Alistair. Maybe are they just going to hold back until maybe things kind of resolve themselves a bit?
Well, you've got to wonder what's kind of going on, because there must have been a plan, I presume, to have one in June. They do one every year in June. So either the current, let's call it the pandemic, current pandemic has just sort of wiped everything out, every way, way, way behind and have nothing to show. Or they've decided that for some particular reason now is not the right time, or some hardware development that they were maybe hoping to announce, that would be nice, hasn't come to fruition. There's two things here. Either things are just delayed, or they never actually anticipated doing one because, frankly, they've got nothing in the works. Which I'd be surprised about. Given the fact that we were expecting a Direct back in November and we finally got it in, was it March?
Yeah.
Something like that. I mean, that was a huge window. So maybe they're just way behind in everything they're developing, and they literally do have nothing in the works they can show us. Possibly.
Yeah, my third option on that would be that they are developing something big, whether that's a pro or the next step or whatever, and they're just behind on that. So they have got something big, but they're behind on it and don't want to talk about it yet. Anton, where do you sit with it?
Yeah, you know, the event even we had in, was it March, I believe, was only a mini event. We didn't get any of their own exclusives. My theory is that last year we heard it mid-year, but we still got like Breath of the Wild in the September event, was that Nintendo was moving to only showing off games that were coming out within the next couple months. Or like next 6 months, I think it was, or the year, which I think that was a response to them cancelling Metroid Prime. So what I think they've been doing is they spent, you know, all of 2019-18 announcing games 2 years ahead. And, you know, now that we're here, that we've gotten to a point where there is a gap between the games they announced 2 years ahead and games coming out in the next 6 months, and we've gotten a little bit of a drought, and they're maybe just trying to tide over maybe the news cycle of the new consoles and maybe trying not to compete with them for news coverage. But I think we're maybe just in a little bit of a drought with our new system. And when we get a new event, whenever it may be, it'll be what's happening that holiday season.
Well, they were very careful, James, to label the last one as a kind of mini, not a full direct. And I do wonder if they're maybe holding back for a big announcement at the next proper direct, whenever that may be.
Well, that's what I reckon as well. But usually it's about summertime when they go, this is going to be our big game for Christmas, for Thanksgiving. This is going to be the one we're all building up to. And if you don't have a direct in June, you're not giving yourself an awfully long lead-up time, which means either they know it's going to be amazing anyway. I mean, they usually are of really good quality, but either that, or do they just not have something big to put out at Christmas?
Well, I guess time will tell. And of course, it is just a rumour at the moment. They haven't said anything, so hopefully we might be... Or maybe it's because it's coming in May. You know, there's always that. There's always the surprise. You just never know with Nintendo. Right, I think it's time for us to move on to the quiz.
I have so many questions.
Now, I don't know how much you've heard of the last couple of weeks' quizzes, James, but we've reverted back to a slightly new way of doing it. I'll explain for those who haven't heard it. Much like we did in the beginning, I will give you a game. I'll give you some details from a game, and you each time I finish my round of Clue, you all have a chance to tell me what you think it is, and we keep going until someone gets it. The third one, I'm going to give you a game title, and you've got to give me the year that that game came out. And that game title hopefully is one that you haven't heard of. Or if it is, good luck, because you might well know. The point system is slightly confusing because we felt Anton is too good for all of us. So Anton basically gets a point for every time that he gets one, he wins a round. Alistair gets 2 points. So at the moment, it's 2-1 to Alistair on a technicality. James, because you're not on the podcast very often, but obviously, you know, we want you to have a fair chance. We're going to give you 3 points if you win. So 1 point to Anton, 2 points. It's like a handicap, basically. So James, you've got 3, okay? Your handicap, okay. Handicap is plus 2. Alistair's is plus 1. All right, so are we all ready?
Absolutely. Indeed.
Yep.
Okay, this was a game produced by Stainless Games and published by Interplay Productions and Sales Curve Interactive, originally released in 1997. Any guesses?
Cool Borders.
I'm getting lots of blank looks.
Grand Theft Auto.
No, it's not that. Okay, this was originally released on MS-DOS, Windows, the same year, and then later on it was ported to iOS and Android.
Wait.
Okay.
Were you going to guess?
I thought you said later on the same year as it was released on MS-DOS that it went on iOS, and I got really confused for a second.
No, iOS much later on. 2012 for yes. iOS, Android 2013, MS-DOS and Windows, Mac OS was 97.
I was going to guess Broken Sword. I don't know.
No.
Civilization.
No. This game is a vehicular combat video game. That's the clue.
Death Race?
No.
Oh, what's that?
Cranky. Next clue.
Carmageddon.
Yes, well done, Alistair. Oh, what's yes. Carmageddon? I was going to say the players races a vehicle against a number of other computer-controlled competitors in various stages, including city, mine, and industrial areas, blah, 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 blah. I've played Carmageddon a few times. I'm guessing you have then, Alistair, since you got the answer.
I think I played it once in my entire life. I've never owned it. I don't think I've ever owned it. Maybe okay. I owned it on the PlayStation 1. I can't actually remember.
All right, well done. Very, very impressive. Okay, next up then, second game. A game developed by Midway Studios in Austin and published by Midway for the PS2, Xbox and Microsoft Windows, silently cancelled for the Nintendo GameCube and was released in 2005.
Midway? I hear Midway, I think NBA. I think with NBA Jam.
Mortal Kombat Deader?
No. No, any guesses, James, this time?
I really don't have a clue.
Okay, voice actors include David Duchovny as Ethan Cole, as in Fox Mulder, Marlon Manson as Edgar, Nolan North as McCann, and Ian Abercrombie as Dr. Cray. The blank
faces.
Okay, it's a first-person shooter played from the perspective of the protagonist, Ethan Cole. It features operable machinery, including artillery turrets beside the player's inventory of weapons. Throughout the game, you use a variety of weapons, both human and alien in origin, to defeat their adversaries.
Alone in the Dark?
No.
I have no idea. Not a clue.
Next clue's going to help, I think. In July 1947, an alien spacecraft crashed near Roswell, New Mexico. No, in the United States.
Optimistic.
You can't guess now this time. Near Roswell, New Mexico, in the U.S., the craft was recovered by the U.S. Air Force.
No. Still not a clue.
No idea. What was that really bad Martians attack? A video game of that? What's it called? Mars Attacks.
No. What else can I give you as a clue? Goodness me. I'm running out of clues now. Okay.
You've really overestimated us this time, Mike.
Yeah. Okay. I'll carry on with the sentence then. The craft was recovered by the U.S. Air Force and taken to Area 51 in Nevada, where the lone survivor of the crash, a powerful gray named Edgar, played by Marilyn Manson, was held captive by the U.S. military. Eventually, the Greys opened a dialogue with the Illuminati, led by the ominous Mr. White, and struck a deal with them. And I'll give you a clue. I've mentioned the title of the game already.
The Greys?
What is that like?
The Illuminati?
Is that the next one of 50 Shades of Grey? Is that like the precursor to that? The alien.
Just imagining it's called.
My wheelhouse. This is the generation I came.
Yeah, it's PlayStation 2, Xbox, Microsoft Windows. A later game was released a couple of years later with the first part of the title this time, Black Sight.
Alien
and then the title.
Storm?
Do you give up? Will we throw it?
Yeah.
Okay, the answer was Area 51.
Okay. Never heard of it. I didn't realize it was a game called Area 51.
It obviously left a real impact on everyone, considering how big a cast of famous people it had and the fact that nobody remembers the game. So it was only 15 years ago. It wasn't even, like, it's old, but it's not that old.
If you remember the game, write to us at podcast@nsukp.co.uk and tell us how much fun we are Muppets.
Well, interestingly enough, in 2004, ahead of the game's release, Paramount Pictures announced that they'd reached an agreement concerning the film rights for the game. And in March 2007, comic book author Grant Morrison was hired to adapt the game as a screenplay. So there we are. So it became a proper big thing. So there we are. So nobody got that right, so that's disappointing. But all right, let's move on then to our third round. This time slightly different, James. I'm going to give you the title of a game and I want you to give me what year you think this was released. Now, if you know, maybe don't give away too much unless you're the last person asked. And then at the end, if you've got any other details and you know about it, you can tell us about it. So the title of this week's game, and there's another one I was going to go for, but I feel that we'd have to put a little R rating on if I said the other title. I couldn't go with that one, but I'll tell you in our last call podcast that we do for our Patreon. This game was called Tongue of the Fat Man.
Metal.
So let's start with who won this last week? Anton won last week. So let's start with Anton. What year do you think this was, Anton? Tongue of the Fat Man.
'97.
Okay, '97. I'm not even going to ask you for any more details because we're going to get some more. We're going to come to that in a minute. But James, what year do you believe this was?
I am going to guess 2003.
Okay, and Alistair.
Yeah, well, I was going to get 2002, but that's now too close to James. Damn it!
You can go whatever you like.
I'm sorry. I'm going to go with 2002 then. That was what was in my head. We'll go with that.
Okay, you are all fairly wrong, but I can tell you that Anton's the closest. Not that close though. It actually was released in 1989, originally on DOS, but in 1990 on the Commodore 64 and also on the Mega Drive, believe it or not. Well, the Genesis, the American version of the Mega Drive. So
what is the game? I mean, that is a weirdest name. That's one of the weirdest names I've come across.
So it was also known, and you might know this as well, that it was also known, you might know the also known as title as well, because it was also known as Mondo's Fight Palace on the Commodore 64. And on the Genesis, it was changed, the name was changed to Slaughter Sport. Ring any bells?
Not even that.
Do any of them come close to Tongue of the Fat Man?
I have no idea, but that was what it was called. So the game gives the player 10 races to choose from. Each race has their own special moves. The original version of the game starts with the player having 3 species to choose from and unlocking new characters by defeating them in battle. There's the best one. The Fat Man's special ability is the Tongue Lash, where his belly opens and sprawls out a tongue tweak that jabs the enemy. Despite being the boss fight of the game, the players have defeated Mongo in as little as 5 seconds. The game is based on the 6th episode of Star Wars, especially on Jabba the Hutt. I'm not sure if that's just a Wikipedia extra added there, because I'm pretty sure that doesn't make sense given the times. However, I love this Tongue of the Fat Man. The image that they used on the American box art is worth looking at. It's it was actually, yes, that's the image Alistair's showing us there. It's terrifying. It was also rated the worst box art of all time.
It's pretty horrific.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly terrible. It's the lower half of someone's face with their eyes covered in a mask with Tongue of the Fat Man, and then the lower half's got, I don't know, it looks like it's got marbles up its nose, it's got eyebrows stuck to its nose as if they're eyes. It's got like, do you ever watch Red Dwarf when they did like the upside down faces and they stuck the eyeball in their chin? It looks a bit like that, but worse.
Yeah, it's terrifying. It's not good. Anton, you did win.
Round. I'll take it. You know, I thought it would have been with kind of a cruder title. I was getting like MS-DOS, you know, young PC vibe, where we could finally get stuff that was deliberately pushing the boundaries, but they're kind of being more tongue-in-cheek about it. But, you know, Commodore 64 game, what's the difference? It's got a keyboard.
So well, is that a draw? Do we chuck one up each, or does nobody get it?
Well, I see that would be a bit unfair on poor Anton, I think, if you were to get your 2 points and he was to get his one and James was to get none. So I think what we'll do is...
Tiebreak!
We'll give you both a point for that one, I think. I think we'll give Anton and Alistair a point. And James, I'm afraid you'll just have to come back and try and earn a point another time. Because...
Yep.
You ain't winning that time.
I was screaming the word peggle at the podcast last week. Over and over again.
Yeah. I thought you would know it because I mean, I remember that you know all about Peggle, and I played it a lot as well. But Alistair didn't quite get there in the end. Well, you did get there in the end, didn't you?
I did get there in the end eventually, but I sunk many, many, many hours, probably days into that game, and it was really annoying that it would not come to memory.
Sorry, Anton.
I feel sorry for our Alien 51 fan in the audience. Because
so do I, because really the game's called Area 51. You still don't remember what it's called. Oh, and on that bombshell, I think we should probably finish this week's episode. Just a quick reminder, nsukp.co.uk. Anton, where do you want people to head?
Yeah, there. So if you head over there, you can get basically links to everything you could ever want, such as our Twitter at nsukpodcast. And similarly on Facebook, and links to our kind of ever-growing YouTube channel, where you can get little wee bite-sized nuggets of the podcast. If there's anything, you, I guess you've already listened, so that's a little bit... Never mind. But on the website, you do get our Patreon. Well, not on there, but you can learn about our Patreon and all the lovely little wee rewards we do, because we get, like, literally we're on episode 62 of the podcast, and we've only ran the Patreon since...
January,
and you know we're at 100 episodes total, so it certainly keeps us busy and gets you a decent bit more content. Last call, that one's a wild ride these days.
yeah absolutely. Well, that's what we'll be doing next. James, thank you very much for joining us this week.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll get you back on for another episode soon. And remember, YouTube as well. Check us out there, because we'll be putting more clips from the show up there. And and in the meantime, thank you very much for listening and downloading. We will be back in a week's time for another podcast. Until then, goodbye.
Cheerio.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.